should be president of the United States? I don't mean who do you plan to vote for, though I am curious about that. I mean, what kind of person should be president? What qualities make a good or bad president? It's an important thing to think about, and here to help us think about it is Gautam Mukunda, the author of the new book, Picking Presidents: How to Make the Most Consequential Decision in the World. Gautam is a political scientist and a professor, and he's currently a research fellow at the Harvard Kennedy School's Center for Public Leadership. In the book, he takes a deep dive into the history of the American presidency in an attempt to distinguish the psychological traits that separate effective leaders from ineffective ones, and to help prepare you for the voting booth with some helpful guidelines. Here he is to share five big ideas from the book.
Hi there. My name is Gautam Mukunda, and I'm the author of Picking Presidents: How to Make the Most Consequential Decision in the World. I'm a research fellow at the Harvard Kennedy School's Center for Public Leadership. I've been a professor at both Harvard Business School and Tsinghua University, and I also wrote Indispensable: When Leaders Really Matter. For my new book, Picking Presidents, I look at how we choose the most powerful person on Earth. Every 4 years, Americans give someone the power to change or even end the world. And most of us, regardless of party, think that we're not selecting the right people. In Picking Presidents, I look at how we've elected presidents and why some are so great while others are so awful. I'm going to share with you five key insights from my book about how we can pick and be better leaders, both inside and outside the Oval Office. Insight number one. There are two kinds of presidents and leaders. And I don't mean good ones and bad ones. Here's the funny thing about leaders. Most of them don't matter that much. Why? Because the leaders of big organizations usually aren't chosen randomly. They're the product of a process. When organizations select a leader, they usually have a pool of candidates which they evaluate closely. In a big organization, this can take years, or even decades. Over time, this evaluative process eliminates outlier candidates, leaving the pool more and more homogeneous until, at the end, the final few are so similar it doesn't really matter which one you end up with. I call leaders who rise through this sort of process filtered. Filtered leaders, presidents included, tend to be competent but unexceptional. Good, but not great. You won't get someone who transforms a country, but you can be confident they will rarely make avoidable mistakes, and, when dealt a strong hand, they can do very well. Think Tim Cook at Apple, or, in politics, George H.W. Bush. Who is the most filtered president ever? You've probably heard of him. It's Joe Biden, who before he was elected had spent 44 years in either the Senate or the vice presidency, 20 more years of filtration than the two presidents tied for second place. Most leaders get their jobs through extended filtration. Most, but not all. Suppose a CEO gets hired from outside, or inherits the job. Somehow, he or she bypasses the filtration process. Leaders who do that are unfiltered, and they haven't been thoroughly evaluated and homogenized. So they can be very, very different from everyone else who might have gotten the job, and, because they're different, they make unique choices that no one else would have. The thing about such unique choices, though, is that they are high variance. They tend to be either great or awful. They're rarely boring. Think Steve Jobs, who did things that no other CEO would ever have even imagined. That's the best case. But most of the time, such unique decisions don't work out. If no one else in the world would do what you're about to, there's probably a good reason for that. Who's the most unfiltered person ever elected to the presidency? You won't be surprised to learn that it's Donald Trump, who was the first president ever to have spent not even one day in the government before taking charge of it. Insight number two. Huge swings in history can be produced by the tiniest things. The difference between a great president and a disastrous one can, sometimes, be a matter of inches. Not metaphorically, literally. Historians remember Harry Truman as one of the best presidents. He was a longtime senator who, as president, created NATO and the Marshall Plan, led the United States out of World War II and into the Korean War, and desegregated the military. He was chosen as vice president by Democratic Party leaders who knew that Franklin Roosevelt would never survive his fourth term in office. They wanted to replace his previous vice president, Henry Wallace, with someone they knew and trusted. That's the essence of filtration. But why was it so important to replace the incumbent vice president? Partly because they felt that Wallace would have been a handicap in the 1944 presidential election. But at least as important, they felt Wallace was too far to the left. In particular, that he was too sympathetic to the Soviet Union. Wallace had once said that he wanted Harry Dexter White, the architect of the post-war monetary system, to be his Secretary of the Treasury. Unfortunately, thanks to decrypted Soviet messages, we now know that White was almost certainly a Soviet spy. Wallace was just wrong about the Soviet Union, something he said himself in 1952, when he wrote an article titled, "Where I Was Wrong." President Wallace could have been a disaster, but it almost happened. He was very popular with the delegates to the 1944 Democratic Convention and fought hard to stay on the ticket. His campaign team tried to stampede the convention on his behalf. Right after FDR was renominated, they surprised the party establishment by unleashing banners, coordinated chants, and even having the Wallace campaign song played by the convention's organist, whipping the delegates into a pro-Wallace frenzy. Florida Senator Claude Pepper, a leader of the Wallace campaign, stormed the stage. He was literally only a single step from the podium, where he could have nominated Wallace and, in the chaos, overridden party leaders and secured him the nomination. Just one step. At that climactic moment, desperate party leaders shut down the convention by claiming that there had been a fire code violation. And as for that organ, they sent a man with an axe to shut it down. Then, overnight, they put to work the full arsenal of arm twisting and inducements the party establishment had at its disposal, pressuring the delegates into supporting Truman. So the history of the United States, maybe even the world, hinged on just one step and an axe. Insight number 3. Filtered leaders are great bets, unless the system is completely broken. Filtered presidents usually succeed. But not always. Most historians pick for the worst president in American history is James Buchanan, the last president before the Civil War. It's hard to have a worse outcome for your presidency than a civil war. But Buchanan was the second most experienced unfiltered person ever elected president. So why did he do so badly? Filtered systems pick known quantities. That works, unless the system is selecting for failure. In the lead-up to the Civil War, Southern interests seized control of the Democratic Party's presidential nominating process. Winning the nomination required at least 2/3 of the delegates, which made it mathematically impossible to get it without Southern support. Southern leaders took advantage of their power to constantly increase their demands. By the 1850s, they had adopted a pro-slavery position, one where they argued that slavery was a positive good that should be expanded to include the entire country. They refused to support any candidate who did not agree with them, resulting in the election of presidents referred to as doughfaces, Northern men with Southern principles. Buchanan was the ultimate doughface. He spent his entire, incredibly long political career scorning the anti-slavery movement and giving the South everything it wanted. Once in office, he did exactly what he had been elected to do. He unconstitutionally intervened in Supreme Court discussions to support the Dred Scott decision that declared the government had no power to ban slavery in the territories, and aggravated the guerrilla fighting in Kansas that presaged the Civil War by supporting Southern insurgents there. When Southern states began to secede, Buchanan even declared that he had no power to stop them. Sitting on your hands while a Civil War begins is a great way to be remembered as the worst president in history. But the irony is that that is exactly why he was president in the first place. If he had been willing to do something else, he would never have become president. So you can rely on filtered leaders, right up until the moment when the whole system is broken. But if it is, you might need a leader as great as Abraham Lincoln to save you. Insight number 4. the worst presidents could have been avoided. A broken system means an almost inevitable disaster. The worst leadership failures, though, are the avoidable ones. Unfiltered leaders can fail catastrophically. And the ones who do share some characteristics that make them very likely to fail. Failed unfiltered leaders often have psychological traits like the dark triad: narcissism, Machiavellianism, and psychopathy. What do these traits have in common? They make someone more impressive on first meeting than they deserve to be. The first time you meet a narcissist, you're likely to find them to be quite extraordinary. Over the long run, though, you'll tire of them. And if they're in a leadership role, they'll usually fail badly. These catastrophic, unfiltered leaders often have other medical issues too, like alcoholism and drug addiction. And they often have radical and highly simplistic ideologies that offer, as H.L. Mencken once said, a well-known solution to every human problem. Neat, plausible, and wrong. How does James Buchanan's only real contender for the title of worst president stack up? That's Andrew Johnson, Lincoln's second vice president, who became president when Lincoln was assassinated. Lincoln picked him to gain support from pro-war Democrats in the 1864 election because Johnson was the only Southern senator to stay with the Union. This initially gave Northern leaders, including Frederick Douglass, hope that he would carry on with Lincoln's policies. Sadly, they were horribly disappointed. Once he became president, he dedicated himself to restoring the South's pre-war social structure. Before Johnson became president, the defeated South had been willing to go along with civil rights for Black Americans. Johnson's support for Jim Crow, however, made Southern whites hope that, having lost the war, they could still win the peace. Over the next few decades, they rolled back virtually all the progress made because of the war. The first two Black senators were elected in 1870 and 1875. The third had to wait until 1967. Black Americans had more civil rights in 1867 than they did in 1957. It didn't have to happen that way. It happened because of Andrew Johnson. One disastrous, unfiltered president set the course of civil rights in America back by a century. Insight number 5. The very best leaders and presidents combine intellectual brilliance with managerial skill. If unfiltered leaders can be disastrous, they can also be great. Just like Andrew Johnson, Theodore Roosevelt became president via assassination. He was made vice president against his own wishes because Republican elites wanted to remove him as governor of New York and put him in a place where he could do no harm: the vice presidency. Only Mark Hanna, the most powerful party boss of his day, opposed TR's nomination, warning that there's only one life between this madman and the presidency. Hanna's prophecy came true when William McKinley was assassinated, making TR the youngest ever president. He transformed the country as few ever have, from building the Panama Canal to enforcing the Sherman Antitrust Act, fighting corruption, strengthening the regulation of railroads, food, and drugs, and putting more than 230 million acres of public land under federal protection. If your kids have a teddy bear, even those are named after TR, from a bear cub that he refused to kill during one of his hunting expeditions. Were there signs that TR would make a great president before he got the job? Plenty. The extraordinary psychologist of performance, Dean Simonton, found that the trait that best predicts leadership success is something he called intellectual brilliance, which combines pure intellect with curiosity, sophistication, and inventiveness. Seen in that light, it's not a surprise that Lincoln is the only president with a patent. If intellectual brilliance is a key component of leadership success, well, Theodore Roosevelt wrote 12 books, several acknowledged as all-time classics, before he became president. He was, famously, equally at home with experts in naval strategy, forestry, Greek drama, cow-punching, metaphysics, protective coloration, and football techniques. Another key hallmark of successful unfiltered leaders is a high level of managerial skill, and, despite his youth, before becoming vice president, TR had been a successful civil service and New York City police commissioner, assistant secretary of the Navy, governor of New York, and, of course, colonel of the Rough Riders during the Spanish-American War. It's hard to imagine someone more likely to succeed in the presidency, no matter how unfiltered he was. Leaders, particularly presidents, really can change the world, both for better and for worse. But far too often, the difference between an awful president and a great one has just been a matter of chance. The presidency, however, is far too important for us to keep relying on luck. If we do a better job of picking presidents and other leaders, if we can get more Theodore Roosevelts and fewer Andrew Johnsons, there's no limit to the country and world we can make. Thanks for listening, everyone, and I hope you enjoy the book.
Thank you, Gautam. That was Gautam Mukunda with 5 big ideas from Picking Presidents, How to Make the Most Consequential Decision in the World. You might also want to check out our book bite for Electable, Why America Hasn't Put a Woman in the White House Yet, by Ali Vitali. I'm Michael Kovnat. Thanks for listening.